Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello, and welcome to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thank you for joining me on this first broadcast of the new year, 2018, and let's hope that it is a safe and happy year for the American law enforcement community. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this broadcast. You can follow it on iTunes, Stitcher, download it off the America Out Loud app, and of course you can listen on live talk radio as well. Before we listen to our guest today, who is a very interesting fellow, let's take a walk into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The briefing room. Headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
2017 saw the deaths of law enforcement officers, the murders of law enforcement officers, diminish by a pretty good degree. 125 law enforcement officers lost their lives in the line of duty, substantially lower than the previous year. And then the murders of law enforcement officers was also down very significantly. 44, I believe, was the final tally, as opposed to 80 the year before. So we saw a tremendous decrease in the deaths of law enforcement officers. Now, some of the media reported on this and kind of reported that, wow, this is what a safe job policing is all of a sudden. And I was actually interviewed by several media outlets about it, and they were asking me why I thought this had come to pass. And I do think that there are some factors here that bear talking about. First of all, I believe that the fact that President Trump is the president, I believe, is having an effect on the violence towards law enforcement officers. I think that there has been a diminishment in the deaths of law enforcement officers for a number of different reasons. I think that President Trump did play a minor role in that, the fact that he was elected. I think that there was some other factors here, though. I believe that the greater use of safety equipment like protective vests played a role, so technology was part of it. But I hate to burst anybody's bubble, but two things here that need to be talked about. One is, I think that the diminishment of proactive policing is also a factor. I think that the Ferguson effect, or the Obama effect, however you want to call it, where police officers are doing less proactive work so they don't get jammed up in prosecutions and the political environment that we have seen taking place, I think it's played a role. If you have law enforcement making fewer encounters with people, then you're going to see a diminishment of these contacts leading to confrontations. So I think that's another factor. But hidden in all of this is something that is really a huge factor. And that is that last year, while we saw the second fewest line of duty deaths in the last 50 years, and our officers being killed or wounded by gunfire less than before, in 2016, for instance, 253 officers were shot in the line of duty. But last year, there were 271 officers shot in the line of duty. So we're not seeing a diminishment of the violence and the gunfire towards law enforcement officers. That's been completely glossed over by the media. All right, let me repeat that, because this is really important. In 2016, 253 officers were shot in the line of duty. In 2017, 271 officers shot in the line of duty. Now, maybe less were killed because of the vests and because of other factors, but the fact of the matter is that the violence towards law enforcement increased, not decreased. So when you look at the statistics, understand that there is a greater story here. And I am in complete agreement with the Fraternal Order of Police, which is the largest police union in the country, and their president, Chuck Canterbury, when he calls for making it a federal offense to target law enforcement officers for injury and treating it as a federal hate crime. I believe that this is long overdue. There are some states that have enacted these type of laws, calling Blue Lives Matter laws, and I think it's time for the federal government to step up. One of the other statistics that I'm waiting to see is the number of officers physically assaulted. In 2016, we saw a huge increase, 57,000. 57,000 law enforcement officers were physically assaulted. That means pushing, shoving, beating, stabbing, bricks, shooting, running over with cars. Anything that you can figure as far as physically assaulting a police officer happened. And 57,000 is an astounding number. So I am anxiously awaiting to see what the FBI statistics are on that. Because if we're seeing such a dramatic rise in the shootings of police officers, I can imagine what the rise in physical assaults just might be. So, although we saw a diminishment, and of course we welcome that, the diminishment of line-of-duty deaths last year, I'm afraid that I don't want to be standing up and cheering for it because I just think it was a fluke of nature. Now, let's talk about some other stuff that's going on here in law enforcement. I got to tell you, I read a headline that really pissed me off. And this comes, when I talk about the war on cops, it's not just a physical war. It encompasses a lot of different things, including the officers who go into a restaurant and are not served because they're wearing a police uniform. It is the media attacks on law enforcement when they utilize little propaganda bits of video and then turn it around and make it look like it's violence that the police started. But it's also the courts and the way that they've treated law enforcement. And this is a perfect example. I want to read you the headline. Cop denied benefits for Sandy rescue injuries goes to court. Now, here's what happened. A New York City police officer was severely injured while trying to rescue people during Hurricane Sandy. He tried to save the life of another officer who was in a house. They had found one dead body. They were trying to pull others out when the house collapsed on them. Now, they received injuries, and so they put in for a disability. Well, the court said, and this is astounding to me, a lower court upheld the state's denial of his application for accidental disability retirement, saying that his injuries were and I'm gonna quote this, risks inherent in being a police officer, quote unquote. So in other words, he knew the risks involved when he became a cop, so therefore, if he gets hurt in the line of duty, tough beans. What the hell are they talking about? So this officer gets severely injured in the line of duty. The state screws him by saying, you know what, we're not paying your benefits. So he goes to court looking for some relief where you're supposed to get relief. And the court sides with the state saying, yeah, well, you know what, he should have known what he was getting into when he became a cop. So what if he got injured in the line of duty? Too bad. Well, this is sickening to me. And it should be an affront to not every police officer, but to every citizen in the United States. And listen, I have been really familiar with the treatment of law enforcement officers who get injured in the line of duty. And I'm about to announce a massive new initiative, a national initiative that's going to address this. But this, and this is part of it. This is the reason why I am creating a foundation to help the American law enforcement officer just for situations like this, because this is an affront to all. And it is symptomatic of the war on cops. Cities and states and counties all over the United States are taking officers who have been injured and disabled in the line of duty, tossing them aside like an old shoe. Now, at least in some jurisdictions, they are being treated properly, but many they are not. So clearly, this incredible ruling from a court where they basically say, hey, you know what, your injuries resulted from risks inherent in your duties. That's just, it's garbage. It's outrageous. And I hope that they take this all the way up to the Supreme Court if necessary, because this needs to be at a very high level court to rule against these animals, these bureaucratic punks who from the safety of an office deny the financial stability of a police officer who sacrificed so much for the citizens that he serves. That is that's something that we're going to be talking about more about in the coming weeks and the coming months. State of California. Oh, I love the state of California. I could talk about them for hours and for days. But they, as of January 1st, they became a sanctuary state, and it went into full effect on Monday. And it's called the California Values Act. How about that for a law, which was signed into law by Governor Moonbeam Jerry Brown. Bars law enforcement officers from arresting individuals based on civil immigration warrants, asking about a person's immigration status, or, and this is the one that's really screwed up, or participating in any joint task force with federal officials for the purpose of enforcing immigration laws. So what the state of California has done is basically opened the gates of the state to any illegal alien that wants to come in and commit crimes, because they simply refuse to understand that people that commit crimes against the people that live there, many of them are illegals, and they could get rid of them by enforcing the immigration laws. But Governor Moonbeam refuses to do it, as do the politicians there. But in one thing that will put a smile on your face, some artistic people created signs that look like real Welcome to California signs. And this is what they say. And they put it under the Welcome to California. It says, "Official sanctuary state," the signs proclaimed. "Felons, illegals, and MS-13welcome. Democrats need the votes," unquote. So you got to say, somebody had a sense of humor when it came down to, and they put these all over California, which I personally find pretty damn funny. So those are some of the issues that I wanted to talk about in the briefing room here. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. I want to say thanks to the folks over at Nevada Safes. Jim Dillon, a former retired Metro captain at 5250 West Charleston in Las Vegas. Telephone number 702-331-SAFE. And they have the largest selection of security safes. If you own a gun, you need a safe. Contact the folks, Nevada Safes. They literally have the largest selection of safes in the Western United States. So check them out. That's NevadaSafe.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutLoud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
With me today in the interview room, Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is an old friend, comrade, and one of my personal heroes, Dave Smith. Dave is well known in law enforcement circles as a premier trainer. He's probably saved the lives of more cops than any single human being that I know. Not only is he a premier trainer, he's a retired LT, lieutenant from Arizona DPS, and the author of many, many articles and books. And I am proud to have you on the show again. Dave, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio.
It's my pleasure, Randy. And boy, what a great intro. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure, man. You know, you and I recently had a long discussion about the law enforcement in general and the effect that the Obama years had on it and the increasing number of attacks on law enforcement. And, you know, we have to seriously look at that. What do you see as the solutions and as the roadblocks that are in place that are now affecting effective law enforcement use of force?
You know, this is very complex because what you're seeing is the general community supports law enforcement. You know, community is a big word nowadays, so let's just say that as a whole, the United States supports American law enforcement, which is local control, a local constabulary, sheriffs, and officers who support and defend the Constitution of the United States first and foremost, which means they apply it as an individual mandate for every individual they deal with. So there's always been this tradition that part of our authority is also to preserve and protect freedom and liberties and the rights even of the accused. Now, what we saw under the last administration was a constant emphasis on the part of the elites, the media, and the powers that be, so to speak, to emphasize the fact that there was somehow this underlying prejudice that created a harsh culture within the law enforcement community against certain, quote, communities within the community. And so what you saw was this a bunch of junk science, which really, honestly, as a person who loves to study things, when I read a lot of these reports and issues, you just shake your head because this is stuff we talked about in the 70s in sociology class and criminology class, simply dressed up in what is essentially Marxist dogma and then fed to the media and then put out to the people. And I know that sounds paranoid, but there's no proof that American law enforcement has a contingent prejudice against any group, that Americans are the freest people on the planet partly because of our local control of law enforcement. But what you saw was an emphasis to create all these weird social agendas within law enforcement training, which weakened our officer safety training. And what's worse, it corrupted our ability to go out and proactively police.
You know, therein lies, I think, the biggest issues. We have seen depolicing take place. Some people call it the Ferguson effect. I call it the Obama effect. But it, in essence, it is the It is the pulling back of proactive policing, which is where effective policing actually is at the heart of fighting crime.
Yep. You know, law enforcement people, it's not a passive activity. You know, you hear all this stuff. Well, we need to have to guard the community, to sit about. It's almost as if we're going to be firefighters sitting at a station somewhere and we'll respond to a call. Law enforcement from day one in America has been relatively proactive. We go out, we confront people that are in suspicious situations. And part of the problem has become that we, in approaching people like your stop and frisk program in New York, which was so effective, of course it affected a certain subculture of group, that, you know, what we call the criminal class. We don't call it that anymore. Now they're underprivileged or whatever. You know, you have a ton of different euphemisms to make sure we don't ever identify the actual criminality. Yet at the same time, you had some high profile deaths of people resisting. And this is one of the things whenever I talk to civilians, you understand that these deaths aren't happening because some officer walked up and said, oh, I think I'll choke this man to death. The fellow had a heart attack and died fighting in New York, for instance. And these are the things where you see these people resisting. And I have to understand, every year about four officers are beaten to death by unarmed suspects. I mean, getting punched in the head can kill you. Getting kicked in the head can kill you. And we have the right to defend ourselves and defend citizens against deadly force. And everybody thinks deadly force means a gun. No, it means any force likely to cause death or serious bodily injury.
And don't you think, Dave, let me stop you there for a second, because I think, you know, this has been one of the methodologies, if you will, of the media trying to drive the narrative of anti-law enforcement narrative, because the constant use of that word unarmed, it seems to be like the dog whistle of, hey, here it is again. You see, folks, those nasty police doing nasty things. And that reality that you just said is one of those things that is never talked about by the media.
No. And plus, remember, every physical conflict a law enforcement officer is in, a deadly force weapon is present, because we have to bring the entire spectrum of force into every confrontation, which includes the deadly force on our hip. Now, the problem is when I was back in the 80s, first started doing officer safety training nationwide, about 13% of officers killed annually were killed by their own firearm. So you got to understand, an officer that gets knocked unconscious or disabled and can no longer protect his or her firearm is in deep, deep trouble. And this is why we teach this. You can never lose the fight, so to speak. And yet you're seeing more and more and more videos. And again, it's one of those things where you see the consistent pattern of the malfactor, the bad guy who's resisting, and you're not allowed to point that out. We have to pretend as if we're blind to the obvious, and at the same time find the minutiae against the law enforcement officer. And that creates a real difficult situation.
You know, a videotape recently surfaced, I'm sure you have seen it, of an incident which wound up to be a deadly force incident. But the initial officer was basically dragged around by his leg.
Right.
He's trying to, in essence, de-escalate. There's that word again, that de-escalate the situation while he's literally being attacked. And I'm trying to think, when I commented on it, I hate to second guess use of force situations, because if you're not there and you don't get the full flavor of what's taking place, it's difficult to find fault with someone. But this was such a radical weirdness in the way that this officer was trying to de-escalate while he was being dragged around by his leg by a big guy.
Well, my thoughts were, this is almost surrealistic. If you'd have written this up in a script, we'd have said to turn it down as not realistic, because nobody would ever do this. Because you actually see the guy holding him, literally. It's almost a static situation from time to time. It was very bizarre. For those of you that haven't seen the video, it is literally an officer who's been knocked down and apparently quite controlled by a subject who's now holding his leg. And it ends up being a shooting. And the problem you have is of course, the citizens have no idea the context. They have no idea what the officer's vulnerabilities are. And this is one of the things, whenever I do one of my reality training segments where I take a video of a law enforcement officer, I always make it clear, look, I'm not the one handling the situation. And every situation is filled with ambiguities, filled with threats to the officer. And the officer only gets one fatal mistake, and then they're gone. Then we're putting them on the wall to memorialize them. So officers, must win, must have that mindset. And this is one of the things, too, the media refuses to bring real experts on. They bring these political appointees on. You know, and America needs to understand, we have seen the politicization of our leadership over the last 10 years. It started actually many decades ago, and it's been terrible. Thank God we have sheriffs, because they seem to be resistant to any of this, and they understand that since the time of Alfred the Great, the sheriff's responsibility has been to protect all citizens' rights. But I tell you what, it's frustrating to me that we've seen this politicization of our leadership and our pseudo experts, and a lot of funding going into this to the auto training that creates the ambiguity in the officer's mind about what they can and can't do. And that creates hesitation. And you and I both know hesitation kills.
You know, I can't help but think, I wish I knew how that officer that was dragged around, I wish I had knew how he was trained, because he was a fairly new officer. I think he had 2 years on or 3 years on. And then what we didn't talk about was it did turn into a deadly force shooting, but it was another officer that shot the suspect after he was attacked by this guy. So
right.
At one point during the, as you said, that it was almost a static situation where the suspect is holding this guy's leg, and for some reason this officer is trying to negotiate his way out of this. And at that point, I was thinking, and I'm literally screaming at the computer screen, "Shoot him!" I was thinking,
right.
What are you doing?
Are you doing? You know, again, that you're talking about what's happening, and what people who are listening may not understand is, for the last few years, we've had this whole cascade of training designed to make officers hesitate. It's called de-escalation training, which is fine if the subject you're dealing with, the offender, wants to de-escalate. The problem is that the community has to understand it's not the officer who decides if there's going to be a shooting. It's the suspect that decides. The suspect's action dictate the level of force of the officer. And this is the kind of thing where what's happened is we're standing logic on its head, and we're saying, well, the officer can just simply decide not to shoot a subject. Yeah, you know, we call those dead officers.
Yeah.
We don't hesitate. We don't. The suspect is dictating to us. And this is the thing. Yes, I believe there's been some great de-escalation training over the decades. George Thompson's verbal judo was outstanding. But at the same time, it never de-emphasized officer safety. It just simply used verbalization while you're in a position to defend yourself. And now you're seeing a lot of these things as if, well, yeah, if an officer says this, it's some kind of magic wand. Some Harry Potter comes to your beat and casts a spell on a bad guy. That ain't going to happen.
That's good. You know, and then, of course, you had the propagandists taking that little piece of video, editing it so that it looked simply like the officer arrived and immediately shot the suspect. You know, it was
right.
this is something that we have seen more and more over the last couple of years, and that is the use of the video that's out there in order to delegitimize use of force and delegitimize the police and create dissent. And I can't help but think that there is more to this story other than, I mean, why take the effort to take a video like that and then chop it up so that it inflames people against law enforcement? It seems to me that there is an agenda out there, but I don't know who's pulling the strings.
Well, you know what? It's one of those things is, I agree with you, propaganda has become omnipresent in our society, the shaping of people's attitudes rather than giving people facts. And this really has become what I see it as, is a tremendous emphasis to create a singular central authority for law enforcement training, a singular central authority for law enforcement discipline and actions. And what I see happening is an attempt to discredit the local administrations and essentially have federal control, or this was the emphasis, I believe, in the last administration, federal control of our training, federal control of our mandates, federal control of our activities. And the thing is that I've seen is that, and if you read this, this policing in the 21st century, this pseudo-scientific silly little document put together after Ferguson, you see the emphasis was always on the centralization, having a group like the post directors throughout the country decide and dictate what would be training through an interesting idea. But these are pure people who control the records and the training in their states in terms of storage and record and certification. They don't know training, and they're not trainers. They're administrators. And yet there was this odd effect to centralize everything. At the same time, discredit local law enforcement. And what's amazing was they had all these, quote, community policing initiatives. Well, you and I have known our whole career, community policing has been in the forefront of law enforcement. When I was 40-plus years ago as a young Tucson police officer, where I started law enforcement, we were teams. We'd been broken into teams, and we were supposed to get out of our car and meet our businesses and walk through our neighborhoods and become total investigators. And we were going to build a bridge with our communities. And that was back in the 70s, gang. And here it is all these decades later, and we're acting like we have never done anything. Law enforcement has proactively reached out to every community within your community, and it has served us not one bit of goodwill. In fact, I am always amazed when you read Policing in the 21st Century, Obama's little pseudo document, the number one police department that had done everything right, that had led the way in creating a bridge between police and certain communities was Baltimore PD. And within 3 months of publishing that, Baltimore's on fire. They're firing everybody. So all those issues, all those things that everyone else is supposed to do now had totally failed to reach out to the communities. So this is a very frustrating time for me because you and I are both observers and we both care deeply about this profession. And we're stunned that our leadership just kowtows to pseudo-intellectuals, pseudo-studies, and essentially the mentality of the mob.
And, there was an article that came out just a few days ago, which just made me insane. And that is that the leadership, and I'm using that term in quotes, of the Chicago Police Department and the city of Chicago has now changed their taser policy without even consulting the practitioners, that is, the guys who actually use it, and made it so difficult to employ a taser now that it's just a hunk of metal on somebody's hip now.
This is, and that's the thing. You're dead right. You know what? And those of us who are practitioners in the field of police training and defensive tactics, we carp and carp about these issues, and we tell them that, an officer has to be able to do this, officer should have that, we need to have this option or that option, and then immediately they bring in these quote experts. Well, these experts have a lot of explicit knowledge that they got sitting in a classroom teaching a class out of a book or read in a book, but they have no tacit knowledge. You and I have been on the street. You and I have been in those fights where it's incredibly stressful and terrifying because you don't know the weapons. You don't know how many suspects you're going to end up fighting. And this is the ambiguity of life. It's a high liability profession. And at the same time, these people come from a perspective where everything is all written down. It's all ex post facto. They know all the facts. They know the guy was unarmed, or they know the level of suspect's intent. And that's all after the fact. And that's the problem. Law enforcement's being essentially dictated to by people who never have known the ambiguity of real life and the ambiguity of face-to-face confrontations on the street. And this is one of the problems. They've never known victims either, and that's part of their problem.
You're absolutely right. And the I want to talk about the leadership aspect of this. I have been sickened by the lack of leadership shown by the Chiefs Association, the Sheriff's Association. They basically have been silent when all the madness was taking place, all of the propaganda coming out, and yet not one voice from a leadership position actually rose above the fray to speak on behalf of law enforcement, other than David Clark. David Clark, who wasn't in a position of leadership with any of the major organizations, but was simply the sheriff of Milwaukee. And I was kind of stunned that there would be nothing from the International Association of Chiefs of Police. There would be nothing from the National Sheriff's Association or any of the major police leadership forums, except the one posted by Obama, who then created that, as you said, that ridiculous 21st century policing dogma.
Which the Department of Justice still to this day acts as if was some valid study with intense research. It was a 60-day ad hoc study of people with grievances. And now America should know that your Justice Department is still full of the residual effects of this, and it really needs to be stopped, because it's leading to all kinds of bad things, because it's exactly why you're saying. Law enforcement leadership is essentially political appointees. And that's the problem. I'm sure many of them are good intentioned, but they understand, they feel like, if I lose my job, what good am I anyway? So they become essentially quislings, the Norwegian leader who helped the Nazis when they were defeated, you know, because I guess I'll help the Nazis because that's the only way to do it. Becoming a quisling is not a good thing. And I know so many chiefs who behind doors will tell you what they feel, and they're right there backing us. And the same thing, sheriffs. I've spoken to many sheriffs associations, and I got to tell you, as a whole, if you go to these sheriffs associations, they were with us. It's just at the national level, like you're saying, we have these political appointees in large urban areas. And America, she's going to have to come to a point where we decide as a people, where are we going to go? Because this is centralized law enforcement and following the whim, capricious whims. Like, for instance, the way the courts are essentially the home of junk science now. And you're seeing this in the transgender issues in our society. You know, what's really best for a child? Well, it becomes politicized and not scientific. And at the same time, you can't even debate it now. The political correct forces shut down anybody's ability to actually debate or argue an idea, because suddenly you're filled with malice if you don't agree with this, with these bizarre thoughts. I take this right back to when Judge Kennedy ruled on gay marriage, because in essence, in his ruling, he said, if you don't agree with me, you're a no good bigot. I mean, what kind of judge dictates the moral foundation of a person's opinion? And yet that's become the ad hoc or the de facto setting for any debate now, is that a person can judge you morally incompetent because of your opinions. And when you
add in the factors of law enforcement and the incredible power that a law enforcement officer carries, this is a time when we need to get back to the core issue of survival. And yet you don't want to, there are police departments and sheriff's departments that have actually canceled officer survival training because it's politically incorrect.
Right.
That's
playing
with the lives of those men and women who are actually out on the street.
Well, not only that, you look at how the manpower of law enforcement is being redistributed into all these social theory ideas of community policing, like I said, that go back decades, many of them. What you're finding is the actual patrol function is being made more and more dangerous by the lack of effective staffing. And at the same time, you're finding agencies have a harder and harder time hiring people. And this is frustrating, because you would think, with this new atmosphere coming out of D.C., this pro-law enforcement atmosphere, but like I said, you're not seeing it trickle down into justice, and especially the courts. It's going to be a long time before the courts are more amenable to law enforcement and less likely to buy into this junk science.
You know, when you're talking about the court system, you know, we look at the really strong gun laws up in the Chicago area, and you know, that is probably the most regulated state for firearms. And yet you look at the murder rate and the violent crime rate using weapons, And the stunning reality is that those laws are meaningless because, and I say it's because they're not in the courts aren't actually sentencing people to what they could be sentencing them to.
No, you know, this business of some kind of bizarre where you adjust justice based on your perception of social inequity is a very dangerous idea, because rather than having equal protection under the law, you now have groups that you, you're making excuses for their behavior based on what your own sense of social justice is. And so you have these gangsters who are arrested armed, and then they're getting slaps on the wrist. And this has always been the problem, where you have this, if you're not willing to understand that criminality is an individual issue, the predisposition to commit a crime or commit violence is within the individual. It's not, if you're going to say that society has some obligation to fix it, then you have to address that. What is the anthropologically, what is the cultural effect? You know, what is the sociological effect? But both those schools have become co-opted by social justice warriorship, which spends all its time finding lamentation instead of solutions. What is going on in the urban center, the blight that is Chicago, that creates a child who grows up willing to kill on a whim? Well, that's a social problem. But instead, we're worried about whether Chicago PD is going to treat that criminal properly, when he's standing on a street corner waiting to sell drugs. And this is where you've got this dislocation of what we could do as a society, a free society. You've got to have your law enforcement officers keeping, because people who are not safe, if we can't go out and make a community safe, you're not free. If you and I live in fear every day, Randy, we're not free.
Right, right. And, you know, we're seeing that in Baltimore, especially, you know, that law enforcement was basically decimated by that yeah. moronic mayor and that idiotic state's attorney Mosby, and the hierarchy, that idiot Batts, who was the police commissioner. I mean, they tore that place up, and now as a result, it's almost lawless, and the people there who are basically trapped in their homes are crying out for the police, and they are not being given. The law enforcement officers are not being given the opportunity to police any longer.
No, but here's the problem, too, is how do you and I tell the American citizens? You know, we're preaching to the choir on this show because we're being listened to by law enforcement mostly. But these citizens, you're not going to go on CNN. You're not going to go even Fox. You're not going to go on any of these networks. I don't care who they are or however well-intentioned they may claim to be. None of them are going to show you the blight that is the urban center. None of them are going to show you the crisis that occurs when you don't raise people to believe, when you value criminality, when you value, you know, when we complained in the 80s about the rise of the thug culture. Well, now you can't even use the word thug because it's got racial implications. See, the ability to stymie social discourse, the ability to stymie debate and argument and analysis has been the power of the media, who quickly condemns anyone who says anything that they find offensive, yet not understanding the true offense is someone being gunned down in the next couple hours in Chicago. And this is the problem. We can't solve social problems if we can't talk about social problems. We can't do a scientific analysis. And the junk science you get out of universities today has just become useless too. And again, it's the listeners need to do is go and look up policing in the 21st century on any of your browsers, and then read it. Incredible. You don't have to read all 131 pages. Just read some of the highlighted things, and you'll see all they did for 60 days was bring in groups to complain about law enforcement. You have hardly any true expertise. You have hardly any. You have just a couple that you and I would say are truly experts, and they're allowed to come in. But there's no real discourse. It's all just nodding and shaking. It's almost a bizarre kangaroo court against law enforcement.
And so the worst part
it's frustrating.
Is that some major chiefs or chiefs in major cities embraced it and touted it as being this is the end all and be all, and we're going to implement it in our city. And you're looking at these people going, whose side are you on? Are you on the side of law enforcement? Or are you on the side of the social justice warriors that you're just giving in to them?
Right, because a lot of that study is mythology. A lot of it, you know, in fact, I got to tell you, you know, you read it, and no one actually did. This is the funny thing. I've talked to so many chiefs and sheriffs, and everybody acknowledges that, yeah, they got it, but nobody actually read it. It's constantly referred to. This latest thing on dealing with transgender and or LGBTQ issues, you know, was refers back to it a ton. So what it is, it's a self-referential study for a bunch of bureaucrats, and nobody realizes the implications. Nobody bothers to look at the footnotes. Nobody bothers to look at the studies and see it's all non-replicatable. It's all a bunch of junk science, and it's all based on premises, you know, that you and I with our basic psychology class at the university can debate it out of existence. And that's the whole problem. The entire Justice Department is still pushing that. They're still pushing tons of money. They want to change. And again, underlying what everybody here listening needs to understand is the code word you hear is change the culture of law enforcement. Well, what is that culture? It's protecting people, the innocent, stopping evil. That's a pretty dang solid culture, I think.
I agree.
But it's just crazy, man.
You know, we're running out of time, Dave, this is a topic we could literally talk about for hours. But in reality, law enforcement needs to get back to the basics. Officer survival. Every officer has a right to go home at the end of the night, and law enforcement agencies need to give the tools to those men and women who are out there serving, and that is really the end of that story.
Exactly right. These are men and women who risk their lives every day. They believe in their mission. They believe that freedom depends on a constabulary, a law enforcement community that preserves the individual freedoms and protects the innocent. And that's what they do. And I tell you what, I'm so thankful every day we have so many wonderful kids out there that are risking their lives. They're so heroic. I see them in my neighborhood. I see them all over. And I always think, man, this is the next generation is looking good, but they're going to face more challenges than you and I ever knew.
And that's why we need to continue to support them and to work with them to keep them safe. And I know that you're doing just that. Now, do you have a website that that my listeners can go to?
Sure. Go to jdbucksavage.com or Buck. If you can't remember that, remember bucksavage.com. And you'll take you right to my landing page, and you can get information about my wife and my training. And the thing is that also I encourage you to read my articles every month in Police Magazine. I have the back page in my sites. I try to add a little humor to some insight. And then again, you know, Randy, you and I know officer safety is my first love. So I do my reality training segments online. And I tell you what, again, my greatest wish for this profession is that our people, we get down where we do get below 100. That would be incredible in terms of officers killed and injured or killed every year by assault and accident. But I guess I want to wrap up, say, look, gang, there's a lot of things in the world, but you got to wear your body armor and buckle your seatbelt. Let's start with the basics, and then we'll build from there.
And I just want my listeners to know that Dave is truly, and his wife Betsy have played a role in the lives of so many law enforcement officers over the years. They have no doubt saved the lives of untold numbers of cops. And I really suggest that you go to his website. And if you are a law enforcement officer or a administrator, that you check it out and check out his training, because it is the best. Dave, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. We will talk again soon.
The Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to those men and women of the law enforcement field who have given their lives in the line of duty. At this time, this is the first broadcast of 2018. I wish I could say that I didn't have any names to read, but unfortunately, I have three. The first is Andrew J. Calamiri, Sr. of the California Highway Patrol. Officer Andrew Calamiri was killed when his patrol car was struck by a drunk driver on I-880 near Route 92 in Hayward. He and his partner were parked on the shoulder of the freeway when the vehicle struck the rear of their patrol car at a high rate of speed shortly before midnight. Officer Calamiri was in the passenger seat, suffered fatal injuries in the collision. His partner was treated and released from a local hospital. The driver who struck them was also injured, faces numerous charges pending his release from the hospital. Officer Camilleri had served with the Highway Patrol for 16 months. He is survived by his wife, daughter, two sons, parents, brother, and sister. His end of watch, 12/24/17. Second is Zachary Parrish. Deputy Sheriff Zachary Parrish of the Douglas County Sheriff's Department in Colorado was shot and killed after responding to a disturbance call at an apartment complex on County Line Road in Highlands Ranch at approximately 5:15 a.m. Deputy Parrish and other deputies were speaking to the occupants of the apartment when one of them barricaded himself inside of a bedroom. The man then opened fire with a rifle, killing Deputy Parrish and wounding four other deputies. The four wounded deputies were able to retreat to safety. Responding officers, including regional SWAT team members, re-entered the apartment to rescue Deputy Parrish. The subject inside opened fire on the officers, and he wounded a Castile Rock police officer before being shot and killed. The subject fired over 100 rounds during the incident, wounding two citizens, in addition to shooting the officers. Deputy Parrish had served with the Douglas County Sheriff's Office for only 7 months and had previously served with the Castle Rock Police Department for 2 years. He survived by his wife and two children. His end of watch, 12/31/17. And the first officer to die in the line of duty in 2018 was Trooper Michael Anson. Trooper Michael Anson died as the result of cancer that he developed following his assignment to the search and rescue efforts at the World Trade Center site following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Trooper Anson had served with the New York State Police for 31 years and was assigned to Troop G. On the morning of September 11, 2001, 72 officers from a total of 8 local, state, and federal agencies were killed when terrorist hijackers working for the Al-Qaeda terrorist network headed by Osama bin Laden crashed 2 of 4 hijacked planes into the World Trade Center towers in New York City. After the impact of the first plane, putting the safety of others before their own, law enforcement officers, along with fire and EMS, rushed to the burning Twin Towers to aid the victims. Due to their quick actions, it is estimated that over 25,000 people were saved. Trooper Michael Anson, New York State Police. End of watch. 1/2/18. May all of these officers rest in peace. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. Now, I'm your host, Randy Sutton. You can find me at Facebook. If you look under Facebook and you see Randy Sutton Public Figure, just like that or follow it, and you can see everything that I write and post. You can communicate with me there as well. I answer all of my messages personally. You can also find me at Twitter at LT Randy Sutton. LT Randy Sutton at Twitter. And you can find my books at Amazon.com. I have 4 books, and I think you'll like them. A Cop's Life, True Blue, police stories by those who have lived them, True Blue to protect and serve, and the power of legacy. Thanks again.